back, welcome back, welcome back. This is Sight to the Blind. A brother in the comment section of my previous episode asked a pretty good question. He asked, did I believe at the time of the apostles that were in Rome and Greece, did they ever go to the schools to learn anything? My opinion, no. Other than Paul, who became a Pharisee, I mean, obviously you had to be taught to be a Pharisee. You would have to go and actually learn the doctrine of a Pharisee because it's much more different than the Sadducee. So I think Paul, before his conversion, back to his native bloodline, he would have to sit in some of these schools or the synagogue. But as far as the other apostles trying to learn anything from Grecian history or Rome, I don't think so, especially if you read the book of Maccabees. And those stories are not far from the apostles when the Grecians were called heathenish. So I think that that sting of what they did to the temple was still in the minds or in the taste buds of the apostles, because they knew exactly what the Grecians did. And because the Grecians and the Romans came down there, they erected some of these religions. The Pharisees, Sadducees were mixed in with Romans, Grecians, Herodians, what have you. So I don't think they would ever be caught dead in one of these schools to learn anything. That's just my opinion. I saw also the person that I made the previous two episodes about changed their name. And now I got a little mad, didn't know how to react to the information given. And so all they did was, I don't know what they were trying to do, I guess trying to insult or trying to mock, but it didn't come out the way they thought it was coming out. So I just laughed at them. Because it's the thing that I missed, the point I was trying to make in the last two episodes is when it says, see, ye first the kingdom, and all that you want in your heart and all that you desire will be added unto you. That is such an underrated verse. If you desire protection, if you desire a better economic situation, if you desire love, if you desire children, if you desire a marriage, if you desire to be the head of your household or a brand new house so you can be the head of your household, or for a great man to come underneath to be your covering, all I'm saying is, if you seek ye first the kingdom, that means all of what the kingdom is, where the kingdom is, what they do in the kingdom, and what will they do in the kingdom. If you seek that and make that your first priority, then the Most High is not going to shake you or in my opinion, he's not going to shake you where you won't be able to seek the kingdom. If you're seeking the kingdom, the Most High will move out people out of your paths. He'll move stumbling blocks out of your path. He'll move anything and everything that's going to prohibit you from seeking him so he can be found of you. Like I keep saying this, I said, there is nothing in scripture that if somebody was wholeheartedly, with all their heart, with all their rock, seeking Yahuwah, he would never put a stumbling block in front of you while you're trying to seek him, while you're trying to find him. It would seem to me he wants worship. He wants worship over top of what Satan wants as worship. You think Satan is throwing stumbling blocks of the Most High Yahuwah in front of your path so you can come directly to him? I don't think so. I don't see all these celebrities who worship Satan so hard or worship Lucifer so hard. I don't see Satan throwing in their little rituals to come out and change into, the works of Yahuwah for a little bit to see if they like it. Like he's not doing that. He's not going to make a stumbling block of righteousness before his servants, his puppets, his minions, his slaves. He's not doing that. If he wants everybody else to follow behind these celebrities to worship him, he wouldn't put stumbling blocks in front of their path, is what I'm saying. He will give them rites, rituals, and initiations to prove that they want to follow him, but it will never be soaked in righteousness. So the Most High is not going to throw Satan in front of us when he knows we're desperately and earnestly trying to find and seek him. That's why I keep bringing up the offerings and how to do the new moon Shabbats and how you're supposed to go about these ordinances and statutes, which are mentioned in scripture. I'm trying to help you out, make life easier for you. Because when you forget about this world and make it all about the possessions in heaven, the heavenly treasures, the Most High was like, oh, he's on to something. She's on to something. Let me move the path so she can keep coming to me. Oh, she wants to do offerings. And I see that she doesn't have that much money in her bank account. Let me give her some opportunities. So when she gets a bigger check, she can bring that check or bring that blessing back to me. And I bless her more for it. I'm just going to give you a personal story. Now, I'm not hurting for money. I'm not. But when I have a chance to give alms, I give it. When I have a chance to donate, I donate. I don't expect something back because I donate. I just do it. I like to think I do it just like a visceral response. When I help people, I help people whenever I can. But I'm not hurting for money. So one of my old teammates that played with me in Kansas City, who was one of the groomsmen in my wedding, he sent me a $5,000 check for my son. I was like, it could be nobody but Yah. That warm, I mean, obviously he's my friend, but I wasn't expecting a $5,000 check to be written. I really wasn't. I mean, I was cool with $20. But he sent me that check for the little one. And it was at a time that I was going through or my mind was preoccupied with financial duties of wanting to get things for the household, wanting to get things for my wife. But the Most High knew what I needed. So if I'm seeking the kingdom, and you hear me on here time and time again talking about how you must seek the kingdom, how you must seek first ye the kingdom, how you must do these ordinances, how you must do these statutes. If you do these ordinances and these statutes, he will see that you're trying to seek him and find him, that he will make you blessed, or he will bless you in a way that he will remove stumbling blocks out your way and make it better for you to observe his ordinances. And that's just what the story was. That's what my blessing was. And what I did with that money, the first thing I did with that money was buy something for Sukkot, which was a bigger and better meat. A meat offering, a bigger and better ascending smoke offering. That's what I do anytime I get blessed financially. But that's the Most High's eyes on my deeds. And blessing me at a time where my mind was preoccupied with financial responsibilities. And he always shows up at the last minute. And when things are starting to, where my mind starts to get a little cloudy, he brings me right back to him like, hey, I got you. You don't have to worry about nothing. I told you, do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. You just worry about what you do for me today. I'm just trying to put y'all on to making it easier for yourself. Truly. Because it's about consistency, endurance, and it's about obedience. The rest of this world is nonsense. The rest of it is nonsense. It doesn't matter. Psalms 19, 7 through 11. The Torah of Yahuwah is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of Yahuwah is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of Yahuwah are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of Yahuwah is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of Yahuwah is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of Yahuwah are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned, and in guarding of them there is great reward. We can argue all day about the hemispheres, about what you choose to do with what calendar you choose to follow, but I'm just giving you the foundation of everything in scripture, throwing all of it at you, what they did in the ancient days that had them prospering, instead of giving you some soft doctrine that you can swallow that's going to get you blessed maybe half the time. The reason why he said turn back to the ancient ways, walk in the ancient paths, because that's where most of the Israelites, if it wasn't Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yashareel, if not most of them, were blessed. How do you think Abraham got the riches that he got? How do you think Yitzchak got the riches that he got? How do you think Yashareel got his riches stolen from him and then got more of it back? Yashareel got what his father and mother left for him, taken by Esau, so that he had to work. And then once he was finished working, he got swindled again. So he worked 7 more years. Righteousness. Then after those 7 years, he got the woman that he wanted. So he walks out of there, not with one wife. He walks out of there with 3 more wives. Then he walks out with more of Laban, who he worked for, more of his cattle and livestock. So he takes almost all of what Laban had. And he had enough to give to Esau as a tribute, so Esau wouldn't again try to rob and kill him. Righteousness. And what Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yashareel did was they built altars, they were upright, they were righteous, and they gave offerings. Seems basic and simple enough, right? But it must be some ruach of disobedience or stiff-neckedness that is causing y'all to come up with excuses why you don't want to do it. And I'm just not saying just you, but the community, the called out assembly, feel like it's why I'm wasting money if I do this and I'm not even eating it. I know times is tough. I know money is tight. But there was also an example in scripture where this woman put in 2 mites. And Yahusha said she has given everything she has, even if it was just those 2 mites. Now, it doesn't follow this woman's blessings, but we don't know if she was blessed financially because she gave all she had. This is not a story that we get the conclusion of. But obviously, it was mentioned for a reason. Sirach 35:16-20. He that serves Yahuwah shall be accepted with favor, and his prayer shall reach unto the clouds. The prayer of the humble pierces the clouds. Until it come nigh, he will not be comforted, and will not depart till the Most High shall behold to judge righteously and execute judgment. For Yahuwah will not be slack, neither will he be patient toward them, till he have smitten in sunder the loins of the unmerciful and repay vengeance to the heathen, till he have taken away the multitude of the proud and broken the scepter of the unrighteous, till he have rendered to every man according to his deeds and to the works of men according to their devices, till he have judged the cause of his people and made them to rejoice in his mercy, till he have rendered to every man according to his deeds. Now, is your deeds or your worldly deeds outweigh spiritual deeds? If you were to put your deeds on a scale of biblical deeds compared to your worldly deeds, where would the scales tip? And if your worldly deeds are outweighing your spiritual deeds, shouldn't you get what you deserve, which is worldly deeds that could be easily taken away from you, that could easily spoil? Mercy is seasonable in the time of affliction, as clouds of rain in the time of drought. That's what comes with when you serve Yahuwah. In the time of affliction, you're going to need him. When economic crisis happens, when blackouts and cyber attacks happen, You're going to need your prayer to pierce the clouds. And he's only going to turn an ear to those who choose to serve him. You ever watched the Netflix TV show? I think it was Zero Day, or Day Zero, or Zero Day. It was about a cyber attack and what to do during a cyber attack. And did you know the new iPhone update? If you go to the privacy settings and you scroll all the way down, they have an option where you can lock your phone in case of a cyber attack. So be prepared because it's coming. There's one game, little app game that I'm accustomed to playing every now and again. It's called Last War. And one of the seasons, season 4, is about a blackout. I guarantee you, whatever game that you play or whatever third-person shooter game that you played, I guarantee you somewhere in these cutscenes, it's about a blackout or a cyber attack. So they're engineering a response out of you. And that response is to be docile, to not take it serious because you already see it as entertainment. But what will you do when the time of affliction happens and you are not doing the spiritual deeds? Like I said before, if a blackout happens and it happens during a new moon or Shabbat, the Most High is going to make sure I get some electricity. He's going to make sure I have an opportunity to still do these ordinances and statutes and commandments. Regardless of what everybody else is doing in my neighborhood, I know the Most High is going to make sure that I keep doing these feast days and doing his ordinances. He's not going to allow me to not have anything to offer upon my altar, is what I'm saying. Because I've already started the groundwork. So if I'm already going to be blessed and taken care of to do his offerings, I know that I'm not going to have to worry about food on my table, clothes on my back, a roof over my head, food on my plate. I don't have to worry about that. But that's what you get when you serve. You get mercy. One of the brothers asked me about what's the difference between burnt offering and ascending smoke offering. And I didn't know how to answer it, but I found the answer. It was in Jubilees 21 the entire time. The ascending smoke offering, what they did back then was they still was able to eat the ascending smoke offering. And this is just an ordinance, or what Abraham told Yitzhak before he closed his eyes forever, or until he went down into Sheol. He told Yitzhak the ordinances of what you should do when it comes to burnt offerings and ascending smoke offerings. In Jubilees 21, 8, it says, "You will offer the fat of the sacrifice of thank offerings on the fire which is upon the altar, and the fat which is on the belly, and all the fat on the inwards and the two kidneys, and all the fat that is upon them and upon the loins and liver you shall remove together with the kidneys." Now, we don't have any animals or livestock that we are killing and then having to do all of that. But it says, "And offer all these for a sweet savor acceptable for Yahuwah with its oblation, with his drink offering for a sweet savor, the bread of the offering unto Yahuwah, and eat its meat on that day, and on the second day, let not the sun on the second day go down upon till it is eaten, and let nothing be left over for the third day, for it is not acceptable, for it is not approved, and let it no longer be eaten. And all who eat thereof will bring sin upon themselves, for thus I have found it written in the Sepharim of my forefathers, and in the words of Enoch, and in the words of Noah." Now Noah was righteous, he was saved. Him and his descendants were saved upon that ark because he did the ordinances of offering to the Most High Yahuwah. Enoch, taken up, got to see the beginning of the world and the end of the world, and is up in heaven till this day because he was righteous, and obviously he did what? Offer to the Most High Yahuwah. "And on all your oblations you shall strew salt, and let not the salt of the covenant be lacking in all your oblations before Yahuwah." So whatever you offer, whether it be lamb or beef, you have to strew some salt on it. I'd say go to Whole Foods and get the Oryx salt because it's South African salt. I tried to do everything from the original land, even when I give my drink offerings and when it says in during the new moon Shabbats that you should mingle flour, oil, and wine. I'm still working on the oil bit. I've seen a website for oil or palm oil, or olive oil straight from South Africa, but it's sold out. And it must be good because it's expensive for what it is, but it must be good because it stays sold out. So I'm working on trying to get the olive oil from the land itself. So I got the wine from the land. I got the salt from the land. I'm working on getting the oil from the land. You don't have to, but like I said, this is what my seeking is leading me to. And I'm just pushing myself to that. And as regards the wood, I mentioned this before. You could use cypress, bay, almond, fir, pine, cedar, sabin, fig, olive, myrrh, laurel, and asbestos. These kinds of wood lay upon the altar under the sacrifice, such as have been tested as to their appearance, and do not lay thereon any split or dark wood, but hard, clean, and without fault, a sound and new growth. And do not lay thereon old wood, for its fragrance is gone, for there is no longer fragrance in it as before. You know what wood smells like. You walk through a pine forest, you know it smells amazing. Just imagine the Most High is the reason why he puts these forests where they're at. So just imagine all the rainforests and the forests of the world that the Most High can just easily smell the fragrance of these trees. Why do you think we put those little pine air fresheners in our car? Just imagine if we like sweet smelling stuff or things that smell good. Just imagine what the Most High wanted his entire world to smell like. Beside these kinds of wood, there is no other that you shall place on the altar, for the fragrance is dispersed and the smell of its fragrance goes not up to heaven. Observe this commandment and do it, my son, that you may be upright in all of your deeds, and at all times be clean in your body, and wash yourself with water before you approach to offer on the altar, and wash your hands and your feet before you draw near to the altar. And when you are done sacrificing, wash again your hands and your feet. That is an ordinance I do as well. Before I prepare the meat, I wash my hands, and I started washing my feet before I wasn't doing it because I was like, you know, I'm putting on socks or I'm putting on flip-flops, but now I do the hands and the feet. And he says, I see, my son, that all the works of the children of men are sin and wickedness, and all their deeds are uncleanness and an abomination and a pollution, and there is no righteousness with them. Beware lest you should walk in their ways and tread in their paths and sin a sin unto death before the Most High, else he will hide his face from you and give you back into the hands of your transgression and root you out of the land, and your seed likewise from under heaven, and your name and your seed shall perish from the entire earth. Like I said, those generational blessings and those generational curses will follow. I made perfect examples of that from Job and from the, I can't even think of it now, the brother that I mentioned before who told his children not to ever drink wine or do anything unrighteous, and that followed them, just like the children of Phinehas, who was mentioned in Numbers when he thrust the Israelite and the Midianite through during the time of a plague breaking out on Yasharah because they combined themselves or merged or mingled themselves with Baal Peor, which is sex worship, and became unrighteous as soon as they left out of Egypt. But he gave Phinehas an everlasting priesthood and everlasting peace throughout his generations. You can't even tell me right now who is the descendants of Aristotle. Who are the descendants of Plato? You can't even tell me those descendants who are supposed to be the greatest philosophers of all time. Sir Isaac Newton, who are their descendants? But we know who Jacob is. We know who Yasharel is. We know who Yehuda is. We know Abraham. We know Enoch. We know Noah. So something must be true in the way the righteousness carries throughout generations. We know these men and their descendants because of what they've done for the Most High Yahuwah in serving him. Turn away from all their deeds and all their uncleanness and observe the ordinance of the Most High and do his will and be right, upright in all things. And he will bless you in all your deeds and will raise up from your plant of righteousness through all the earth, throughout all generations of the earth. And my name and your name shall not be forgotten under heaven forever. Seems true to this day. If you women are looking for a type of man like this, then you find a man who's talking more about serving Yahuwah than serving his flesh. When you sit this man down and you ask him, what are your plans or what are your desires? And if the first thing out of his mouth is about himself and what he wants and what he needs, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You're going to be on a long road trying to get this brother into serving the Most High rather than serving himself. The correct answer, especially for you men who are single, if you really want to lighten up this girl's eyes in front of you, if she's searching for the truth as well, your first answer when she asks you anything about what you bring to this table or what you desire for her in your life, your first response should be, I'm wanting to serve the Most High Yahuwah, all his ordinances and all his statutes. Because if a man makes serving the Most High Yahuwah his priority, that means he's showing the woman that he is governed by a higher power, that he has to answer and submit to a higher power. When a man starts to say this is what he wants in a relationship, he is not submitting to a higher power. I've known this throughout my entire life being around women, is that women pay attention to what has authority over you. And if you treat them horribly, they will attack what they think has power or authority over you. I've noticed in thinking about my past relationships. So there's been women who attack my cars or had somebody come over there and cut the amps out of my G-Wagon because she thinks materialism was my authority, had authority over me. Because obviously I paint all my cars up. I had multiple cars. She seen me having multiple cars. So she think that has authority over me. So she attacked what had authority over me. Before I was making money, I always was expressive in every interview when anybody asked me about what was it like having your father on the coaching staff or you and your father being on the same field. And my women would be right next to me and hear me say this. I would bring women around my parents. It wasn't like I was holding them back from anything. I would bring anybody around my parents because my parents were cool. But they saw the authority of what my father had over me. So guess who they would run to when I had these little altercations with them? They will go to my father. Because they knew that had authority over me. When women started walking away from me is when I started demonstrating more than enough that money didn't have authority over me, possessions didn't have authority over me, prison didn't really have an authority over me, because after a while I was giggling and laughing at being arrested. So that's when, like, okay, if things go wrong with him, he's showing me that he has no submitting of authority in his life. He's not scared of anything. So I could lose my life because this man has nothing over him that's going to make him submit and control himself or reprimand himself in order for him to treat me better. So when I came into the truth, I started wanting to serve the Most High Yahuwah because I knew that had authority over me. So if I treated somebody different or treated somebody wrong or slighted someone, I knew I had to answer to somebody. So that's the conversation you women need to start having when you are trying to weed out or test every ruach to see who's perfect for you as a covering. The first thing out of his mouth needs to be, I'm wanting to serve Yahuwah Elohak and I want you to do it with me. Because that man is demonstrating that he's willing to submit to a higher power in order to treat you right. Because he knows he has to answer for somebody stronger than he is, wiser than he is. So when anything goes foul between you two, you know who to talk to. You know who to pray to get him right. Go, my son, in peace. May the Most High, my Yahuwah, and your Yahuwah strengthen you to do his will. And may he bless all your seed and the remnant of your seed for the generations forever with all righteous blessings, that you may be a blessing on all the earth. We are where we at right now because of Abraham, because of Yitzhak, and because of Yaakov. Those blessings pour through the generations because of those three men. And even if you are a Gentile, you're still under the umbrella because you choose to cleave to the house of Yasharel. To be grafted in means you receive the same exact blessings as our father Abraham, as our father Yitzhak, and as our father Yaakov. This is the best form of trickle-down economics you can ever get. Trickle-down blessings because of these three men. Now, when it comes to the land, and I was just going over this and looking up the differences of cities and locations, especially when it came to Gaza, and I looked at, there was a biblical city called Gezer, G-E-Z-E-R. And I was still trying to find out how can a race of giants and multitude of kings live in such a small area where they were able to sustain themselves. Because at the time, the giants were cannibals. It was hard to feed them, the Rephaim and the Nephilim. It was hard to feed these giants. So how can a land no bigger than New Jersey house all of these kings, these nations, and giants? And we hear more about giants' bones being found in America than any part in America or in Africa or in Europe, but we never find them in that region where giants were supposed to be in the Holy Land or the fake Holy Land. So if you read Joshua 10, Joshua 16, and 2 Samuel, it talks about how the Philistines and the Canaanites were in Gezer. Like I said, if you look up the map, the ancient map, what Gezer is, there's no way in the world that this tidy town can house Canaanites, Philistines. And if you read Joshua 12, it says in the mountains and in the valleys and in the plains and in the springs and in the wilderness and in the country of the Negev, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, the king of Jericho, the king of Ai, which is beside Bethel, one, the king of Jerusalem, one, the king of Hebron, one, the king of Yarmuth, one, the king of Lachish, one, the king of Eglon, one, the king of Gezer, one. Look at all these kings in the same area that's supposed to be the land of Canaan. Makes no sense. Because they drove them out. They didn't drive them out. As Joshua 16:10 says, they drove not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephrathim until this day and serve under tribute. Even 2 Samuel 5:25, and David did so as Yahuwah had commanded him and smote the Philistines from Geba until you come to Gezer. So there's more than just one particular nation of giants. And I was looking at the maps, and I looked at I saw a map, it had Reuben in it, and the Reuben is I think in the Lesotho region. I think in certain maps it says the Mazaru Giants Castle. I looked it up. They have I don't know if it's a soccer team or rugby team, but I saw they have a sports team down there called the Mazaru Giants. Because supposedly it's a Giants Castle, but I think it's just, a big thing of rock. I'm not saying that it couldn't be like a cave or something with giants in it, but I'm gonna start at Joshua 22. Then Yahushua called the Reubenim and the Gadim and the half tribe of Manasseh, and said unto them, "Ye have guarded all that Moshe the servant Yahuwah commanded you, and have obeyed my voice and all that I commanded you. Yet ye have not left your brethren these many days unto this day, but have guarded the watch of the commandment of Yahuwah Elohim. And now Yahuwah Elohim has given rest unto your brethren, as he promised. Therefore now return ye and get unto your tents and unto the land of your possession, which Moshe the servant of Yahuwah gave you on the other side of the Jordan. But take diligent heed to the commandment in the Torah, which Moshe the servant of Yahuwah charged you, to love Yahuwah Elohim, to walk in all his ways, and to guard his commandments, and to cleave unto him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul." So Yahushua blessed them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. Now to the one half of tribe Manasseh, Moshe had given a possession in Bashan, but unto the other half thereof gave Yahushua among their brethren on this side of the Jordan westward. And when Yahushua sent them also unto their tents, then he blessed them. And he spoke unto them, saying, "Return with many riches unto your tents, and with very many cattle, with silver, and with gold, and with brass, and with iron, and with very much raiment. Divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren." So this land supposedly had gold. Now, there is no diamond mines in Israel. There are no gold deposits. The land is not replete with gold. You ever heard not one person say, "Let's all go to Israel to look for gold"? So where did this gold, this brass, this iron come from? Especially if this is a nation that didn't really have big excavating tools. Like, it wasn't like they had dynamite and they could blow out iron shafts or iron mines or diamond mines. This stuff was must have been right on the surface, where you didn't have to dig that much. There's only one land that has all of these resources, and that's South Africa and Africa. If you look up the J.G. Bartholomew 1907 map and go down to the bottom, you will see gold. You will see what the cartographer puts in the bottom of the map: gold, 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 sugar, wool, feathers, and diamonds. If you go to Ezekiel, wasn't Satan described as being in the Garden of Eden, and ever covering was every precious stone, the diamond, the topaz, the carbuncle? Where do you think the Garden of Eden was? In Africa. I even found in this map Shiloh. So if you type in Shiloh, you would have to look for it. It's not that difficult to go to the David Rumsey's map collection and look for this stuff yourself. Somebody asked in the comment section, "Tell me all the episodes that I talk about the maps." I'm not doing all that. Just pick what city you feel that you want to investigate, and then go to the David Rumsey's map collection. Type in the top section when it says text on maps. Type in the biblical city and just go through the pages. I know y'all can do that. If you've been on Pornhub before trying to find that one video, your ass will sit there for the next 78 pages trying to find that one clip. So it should not be hard for you to look at certain biblical cities on ancient maps. If you type in Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O-H, on the text by maps, you will get different options. Of course, they're going to give you the fake land first, but eventually you'll come upon the J.G. Bartholomew 1907 map, when you'll see two locations of Shiloh. I don't look at the one north of South Africa. I look at the one near South Africa, because it says in Joshua 22, 9 and 10, "And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Yashareel out of Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go unto the country of Gilead, the land of their possession, where they possessed, and according to the word of Yahuwah by the hand of Moshe." I just happened to watch a little documentary on giants, and they were talking about how giants were found all over the place in Americas and in the Smithsonian, and the government snatched them up, because obviously, if you alluded that there were giants with skulls so big, and the fact they had six fingers and six toes, as it's mentioned in scripture, especially when it came to when one of the children of Yasharel killed the family member of Goliath, they talked about him having six fingers and six toes. So it was a race of giants in a very, very small land. They want you to swallow that lie. Yeah, right. A whole race of giants in a land that's not really replete with resources, animals, or food to feed these giants. You would think you would see them when they came out of the Sea of Reeds and they came out of Goshen and they walked to the Promised Land, which it takes a day to go from Goshen to Israel. But somehow y'all believe it went for 40 years just to travel there and they didn't see no giants when they're in the middle of the desert, especially what they call the Negev. It's not even big mountainous regions. The Hebron Hills, the Judean Hills, aren't that tall. Even Mount Zion is a foothill. They even say it's a hill when you investigate it, like 3,000 feet. They ain't that big. So they would be able to see these giants or these race of giants amongst all these kings and nations packed in this very small land. That don't even make sense. They would have been seeing these giants. It wouldn't take that long for them to go into the book of Joshua and then start seeing giants all of a sudden. You would see them right when you came out of the Sea of Reeds. But I was watching this documentary, and they were talking about how these giants were found with two rows of teeth and six fingers and six toes, and they were in these mounds, which means they didn't even dig to bury them. They were on the ground, and they just covered them up. And all these mounds were eventually excavated, and they took these bones and hid them. Because obviously, if you see that there were giants, that means the whole theory of the evolution theory from Charles Darwin would fall. And being on TikTok, for some reason, my timeline went right into, my FYP went right into atheists. And so right now, I'm battling against atheists. And there's nothing worse than an atheist than a black atheist who's really out here talking about, well, you know, prove that God exists and prove this and prove that. And they don't read any of the scriptures. So they, in their mind, they really think and believe that the evolution of apes. That don't even make sense. Because the Rh negative gene and Neanderthal DNA isn't ingrained in the bloodline of Africans. So if you look at a map of Neanderthal DNA and where it was found, it's sparse in Africa and it's replete. It's abundant in Europe. They say Europeans have 3% of Neanderthal DNA. I don't have anything. When I looked at my ancestry DNA, I don't have any Neanderthal DNA. If I do, it was because it came from Europe and it came from them slave trips when they were raping our women. That's the only way it would have gotten into my bloodline. But it had me remember also that there was two strange animals mentioned in the book of Jasher. The book of Jasher, or Jasher, I'll do the one in chapter 36 first. 26 through 32. And these are the names of the sons of Seir, the Horite. Now it says the Horite are cave dwellers. I don't know if the Horites are even connected or their bloodline is connected to Noah's children's bloodline. It just says the Horite. And the inhabitants of the land of Seir, Lotan, Shaval, Sivan, Anna, Dishon, Etzer, and Dishon, being seven sons. It even sounds black names, Dishon. Being seven sons, and the children of Lotan were Kori, Haman, and the sister Timnah. And that is Timnah who came to Yaakov and his sons, and they would not give ear to her. And she went and became a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esau, and she bore him Amalek. So the Horite, or the cave dweller, we don't know for certain if this bloodline is connected to any of Noah's descendants. I think I've seen somewhere where it was connected somewhere, but I have to do deeper research. But the fact that Timnah, who was a bloodline to this cave dweller, came and tried to mingle her bloodline with the sons of Yaakov, and they're like, nah, that ain't happening. So she ended up being a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esau. So she bore him to him, Amalek. So we know Amalek, that says, where they say his name means to lick blood. So you get cave dweller eating blood, almost like cannibalism, in the line of Esau. If you look at America, there is certain laws that cannibalism is legal. Look it up. There's certain states that cannibalism is legal. I think in LA, I think somewhere in the West Coast, they even had a restaurant that you could cannibalize certain meat. And now, I forgot, it was on news, not recently, but it was a news while ago that this white guy opened up a restaurant and you could be a cannibal. And then it kind of went away. But it makes sense when you look at all the spirit cooking. If you look at the book, the Delectable Negro, and how Europeans were eating slaves on the slave ships. And the reason why the Amistad story broke out is because they were so afraid of the Europeans eating them. And that's what they were doing. Raping, eating, and doing all types of weirdness. They thought that it could consume the ruach, or the spirit, or the energy by eating dark meat. That's just what they say. You could look that up. And the sons of Shoval were Alion, Manakath, Evio, Shifi, and Onam. And the sons of Sivan were Aya and Anna. And this was that Anna who found the Yemim in the wilderness when he fled the asses of Sivan, his father. And while he was feeding his father's asses, he led them to the wilderness at different times to feed them. And there was a day that he brought them to one of the deserts on the seashore opposite the wilderness of the people. And while he was feeding them, behold, a very heavy storm came from the other side of the sea and rested upon the asses that were feeding there. And they all stood still. And afterward, about 120 great and terrible animals came out from the wilderness at the other side of the sea. And they all came to the place where the asses were, and they placed themselves there. And those animals from their middle downward were in the shape of the children of men. And from their middle upward, some had the likeness of bears and some the likeness of kephas, with tails behind them from between their shoulders, reaching down to the earth like the tails of the Duchipath. And these animals came and mounted and rode upon these asses and led them away. And they went away unto this day. I can't even fathom what type of animal this is. So they had legs like normal human beings, but it must have been hairy or really beast-like, because that's what Yemim means, beast. So they must be so beast-like, and it must have had furry faces. You know how you see like those old school, you know, strange human beings that go into circuses as show freaks? And there's always one that's like the wolf man or the wolf people. And they have like these big, hairy, hairy heads. And they got fangs. But they look like bears. There's like some old ancient artwork or engraving that shows a man with man. That shows an animal with human legs and a head of a bear. But like I said, they've had shows before where they talk about people being hairy, really hairy faced, and even having a tail, some of them. Like I said, could this be just one of the things that the fallen angels were doing and they happened to survive after the flood, or maybe that DNA passed on, or they were splicing DNA to have these animals? Because it wasn't in Africa. This is in the land of Seir. Seir is like near where Israel is. And then in Yasher 61, and all the people of Kittim received him with great honor, and they hired him to fight their battles all the days. And Sepho, which is the descendant of Esau, became exceedingly rich in those days, and the troops of the king of Africa still spread themselves in those days. And the children of Kittim assembled and went to Mount Kuptitsa on account of the troops of Angeas, king of Africa, who were advancing upon them. This is about King Sepho's desire to fight with Yaakov and his sons. So he kept antagonizing the king of Africa at that time to get the sons of Yaakov to fight, because he really wanted to go against the sons of Yaakov over Esau's death. So King Sepho was hot with the sons of Yaakov over his grandfather's death. Now, They're in Africa. They're up in around Kittim is Rome. So he's up around that region, coming down around to where Israel is. And there was one day that Sepho lost a young heifer, and he went to seek it, and he heard it lowing round about the mountain. And Sepho went, and he saw, and behold, there was a large cave at the bottom of the mountain, and there was a great stone there at the entrance of the cave. And Sepho split the stone, and he came into the cave, and he looked, and behold, a large animal was devouring the ox. From the middle upward, it resembled a man, and from the middle downward, it resembled an animal. And Sepho rose up against the animal and slew it with his swords. So now we have the opposite. So before we had a human, we had an animal with human legs and a bear-like upper body. And now we have something with a male-like upper body and an animal-like lower body. Where did these animals come? Like, it's nothing else mentioned about these animals except the one that Sepho slew. But obviously it was in a cave for a reason, and it was trapped for a reason as well. We're never going to know what this animal looked like and what these two animals look like. But like I said, I'm saying that that's where those bloodlines were. That's why the Most High hated Esau, because he had children with the Horite. So you imagine the people who are like Vlad the Impaler, all these stories you hear of like Elizabeth Bathory, those who are soaking in blood, drinking blood, all this nonsense. You got to believe that they are descendants of these animals that Esau chose to mingle his seed with. It says in Hebrews, there is no profane fornicator than Esau. So all his descendants were just spreading that gene, those genetics, after mingling with something that could have been an animal. Ugh. So you can just imagine all the stories you see about sex trafficking and wanting people's blood and one of their fetuses and one of their embryos, and then the reason why most of those Jews were kicked out of every country because they were so bloodlustful and sacrificing children, and even get caught with the whole A.B. Finkelstein interview about sticking fetuses into McDonald's meat and all that stuff. And you saw the video of the CEO of McDonald's was hesitant to eat his own food. He was hesitant to eat that hamburger. He took a tiny bite of it. He didn't even take a big bite. He took a tiny bite of it. So that lets you know, they know what's in that meat. So you shouldn't be shocked or surprised anymore when you hear these stories of, eventually when you hear these stories of people wanting to be cannibals. Why do you think they get us to try to eat meat all the time? I mean, eat pig all the time. They know they are unclean people. I'm not saying all Europeans are unclean, but I'm saying the people who have that bloodline, that have that genetic, that gene, that trait, it comes from somewhere. And I know it didn't come from Noah's children, but it comes from somewhere. Mind you, I know and I'm aware that there are certain African tribes also that are cannibals. Hamite tribes that are cannibals. The Maasai, they drink animals' blood. Like I said, but that everything comes through us. It comes through Africa. I ain't going to say come through us, but it comes through the seed of Noah, and it came from before the flood. So you can just imagine what type of animals, what type of behavior was running around back then. And if this is the days of Noah, you can just accept that you're going to see a time where bestiality will be pushed to the forefront, and you're going to see people wanting to have sex with their animals. It's already been happening. I know a couple of people have already been caught online telling people that they've gotten their dogs to have sex with them, or they have taught their dogs some nasty sex stuff. That's just, it's bubbling. I'm just telling you, it's from the ground up, it's starting to bubble. That's when the Most High said, I'm tired. I'm tired of this wickedness. That's why he's going to torch it all. He ain't going to come back with water. He's going to torch it all. And I guarantee you, you need to start serving him now so you ain't turned or burned into a crisp by just being in the proximity of judgment. Now, this whole Iran war, I thought they were going to actually bring back the guy whose father was a monarch in Iran, and like in the 70s, I thought he was going to bring back his son because his son was literally a puppet in the United States. Now he started coming out and saying, oh, you should choose me. You should choose me. I thought he would be the guy. But they did one worse. They wanted to convince us it was a regime change, and they just hired the son. And if you remember during the Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein got caught, they made sure his sons didn't step into his shoes or step into his role. They killed Uday and Qusay and then plastered their faces in the media. They wanted to make a point that there will not be a bloodline descendant of Saddam Hussein that will ever take the presidency or to ever take his position of power. So now all of a sudden, when we so-called, quote-unquote, killed the father, now they put the son in power without going after the son too. Like, wouldn't you think that he would be the next person in line to step up? That's how you know that they wanted this war to continue, because they want to jack up oil prices. That's all they want to do. They want to jack up oil prices. The entire land, this entire earth is based on pirate mentality. It's based on money, looting. That's all they want, money. If the Rothschilds have all this money, that means everybody that's below them, that's working for them, they want their cut too. They want to make sure they are cool during the seven trials of tribulation, during these plagues, doing whatever. They want to make sure they are good. That's why they released the Fallout series, because I guarantee you they already got these vaults built. And you need money to build these vaults. When resources are high, you need more money. When hyperinflation is high, you got to get everybody to get into gambling and fix these games, these sports games, so you can get more money. So the money has to flow upwards. And whatever they can get from whatever comes down or whatever they have that's fat, that's left over, they have to fend for themselves. All these politicians and all the people connected to Freemasonry on down. So that's why the money is going to be out of control, and that's why they want this war to continue. And as soon as people start wising up and start rebelling, they're going to cut Wi-Fi. They're going to cut these apps. They're going to cut being online so you can't group up, because that's how they stifle dissent. If everybody starts waking up, which eventually will happen, if everybody starts waking up and everybody starts talking about, yeah, we got to barter, we got to get together, we know who's against us, they got to cut everything and now make it to be a war between the haves and the have-nots. And during this war of the have and the have-nots, during this period of darkness, if you are a person who has not, but you are worshiping the best you can, the Most High Yahuwah, you will get what the haves have. Their judgment will come at the same time your mercy, or the season of mercy, will reign upon your household. So what I'm saying is something that has worked for me, and I can only tell you what's working for me. But if it works for me, and we're all of one body, one Ruach, and we're all serving the same Yahuwah, why wouldn't you get the same blessings that I'm getting? If you're doing everything that you need to do, whether it be the old way or the new way, you're doing all of it to prepare you for that rainy day or for that season of mercy that you will sure enough need when all of this goes belly up.